This is episode 170 of Drunk on Comics. It's drinking season, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com. Fact for you.
You do?
Yes. Did you know that, okay, everybody's always confused because Oktoberfest always happens in September.
Right, not October.
Right. Originally, Oktoberfest was always held in October, but back in the 1800s, I guess they moved it back a couple weeks because the days are longer and warmer than mid-October. But they just didn't change the name because
right.
Septemberfest doesn't have the same...
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
I thought it was maybe so that they could just be drunk until October.
Like it's a pre-drinking...
Right.
It's like, we're going to get wasted in October. Let's get our livers
yes.
ready now.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like the kickoff to the drinking season.
Yeah. I like that. But isn't it always drinking season? I mean, really?
It is.
Yeah.
Especially if you're us.
So, one of the really cool things, though, about Oktoberfest this year, you know, here in our town of Grand Rapids, was it happened to coincide with the same weekend of GrandCon, which was the comics and gaming convention, and it's primarily a gaming convention. But our good buddy Mark McKenna came into town for the con, so I hijacked him
nice.
And took him down to Oktoberfest, and that was fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. He got to witness all the crazy Stein holding, you know. You will hold the Stein out until you cannot any longer. Don't be a boozy. There's this guy that just like yells at everyone in like this awesome German accent,
oh
which I don't have.
Clearly.
I also don't have a friend here today.
Oh, my heart hurts. No.
Yeah.
I think so, that's just too much booze, though.
Well, you better get prepped. It's almost drinking season.
I know. I'm working on it.
All right, so welcome once again, everybody, to Drunk on Comics. Or if you're a first-time listener, thank you for checking us out. I'm Derek.
Lynn.
And it's just two of us once again back at the bar.
Yes.
Yeah.
I kind of like this.
I like being in the bar. Being in the studio is always fun.
Yep.
But sometimes it's a little too safe.
It is.
I like the edginess.
You have to get your own beer.
Yeah.
When you're not at a bar.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, how much am I going to drink during the podcast here? Like, they just come up and go, you want another one?
Right.
Like, yes, I do. Kind of silly-ass question is that?
Yep.
Although, way back in the day when we had Jim on, like Jim Toe. Yeah, fantastic artist. He would come and sit in and, like, we just made him our beer bitch a couple times.
Oh,
Jim, go get a beer.
I think we're looking for interns. If anybody wants to apply to be our beer bitch.
Although the new rule for interns is that they also have to bring the beer to give us.
So now, they have to be old enough to buy beer.
Well, no, that's just a given. There's no one 21, like under 21 allowed to be on this show. That's a terrible, terrible idea. It's like lawsuits waiting to happen, but... Anyway, you want to get things started with off the shelf?
I do.
You want to start it?
I started last week, so I think you should start this week.
Okay, cool. I am going to talk about a book that I talked about issue one. I also talked about multiple issues in volume one. And this is Hacktivist.
We need more beer.
I have to give a shout out to this beer. Like, we normally hold the stuff for booze in a book, but Perrin Brewing Company, which is here in our you know, wonderful city of Grand Rapids, which is Beer City USA.
It is.
Yeah, look it up.
It's a fact.
It's legit.
It is a true fact.
They have a blackberry IPA. They're very well known for their grapefruit IPA, which is pretty much just a summer thing. And this blackberry IPA, I'm assuming it's probably seasonal. Holy shit, is this good.
It's really good.
Yeah, yeah. It's like fruit and beer had sex in my mouth.
Well, and, you know, fruit beer is sometimes you drink a couple and you're like, ugh, my stomach hurts now.
Well, this is, it's tart, it's got the bite of an IPA without, like, that obnoxious, look how many hops I can put in it.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
For
sure.
And, yeah.
Good job, Perrin.
Yeah, real good job. So, anyway, the beer's already making me stupid today. but, anyway, Hacktivist, Volume 2, Issue 3 of 6. And, I actually went back and reread issue 2 as well. When I first talked about issue 1 of this, it kind of made it... It was difficult because it had been a long time since I'd read volume 1. And I kind of realized that I think if you're going to jump into this book, you really do need to read volume 1. And I don't know if this is my drunk brain that I dreamt it up or if I actually saw it, but I think I saw a hardcover volume 1 of Hackless yes. at the comic book shop yes. last week
yes.
or the week before.
I think it was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So that's out. So go get it. And it's this book's by Arkea, which Arkea, I think when it comes to quality of publishing, and I mean the actual materials, Arkea beats everyone. Always.
Okay.
So,
it's a bold statement.
It is. But anyway, so Hacktivist, this book is the original idea was created by Alyssa Milano.
Just awesome.
Yeah. So, very well-known actress. Also, she's a huge sports nut, and she's also really into like social media and what the internet can do, which explains a lot of why this came out of it. This is co-written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Marcus Toe did the pencils and inks on this, and Ian Herring, along with Becca Kinsey, did the colors on this book. Letters are by Duron Bennett. There is a reason I'm specifically calling all these people out, because this book is probably the best collaboration from start to finish that I've seen in 10 years.
Wow.
I mean, where literally every single piece adds to part of the storytelling. And you can pick it apart and you can go, it wouldn't be the same if that wasn't there. It wouldn't be the same if that wasn't there. The basic idea behind Volume 1 is you had these two friends that created a social network that it was called Your Life.
Okay.
Which was kind of like a Facebook, MySpace,
right.
social media thing. And they basically were hacking people's lives. Able to figure out what they wanted, all this. Excuse me. In the meantime, they were doing hacktivist stuff on the back end for the good, trying to save countries, bring democracy about, whatnot. In this one, you have these little hackers, part of the Save Yourself group, which is, I'm going to actually have to look at it, because it's like period S4V3UR, you know, it's like the Save Yourself.
Robot spelling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like Dave 4-2 or whatever.
Yeah, Dave 2.
So, in this, it's kind of almost kind of like an Occupy type group.
Okay, like that, Anonymous.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, Anonymous is what, you know,
spawned
this thought or idea for the book was okay. Anonymous. And in this, they're wanting to go after like some really rich and powerful people that are taking advantage of stuff, and they're actually killing people, which is one of the biggest differences. In the first one, they were just exposing people. This new group, no, they are killing people.
All right.
And
radicals.
Yeah, and they're actually going after one of the two main guys, you know, Nate Graft, where his buddy Ed Hickox, Ed is presumed dead. And people think that Nate caused it. And so, because Ed was this big, awesome hacker that everyone looked up to, and he was a genius now, they're like, well, we got to get back. So they're now attacking him as well as all these other people. That's as much as I really want to talk about this story, because the story is riveting. And they do some really great things, and I want to get into the book, and it's hard to not start with the artwork on this book, because Marcus Toe is just genius on this. And I'm showing you this because you haven't seen it, but I mean, just these pages, the way things are laid out in here, and it's nice because he's actually utilizing things from volume one that are like this one full page splash is very reminiscent of a large splash page in volume one,
okay.
where these guys are introducing Your Life.
Oh.
And so, you know, it's just brilliant all the way around. And the colors in here, by Ian Herring, he utilizes color so well.
He does.
Because in this scene, when there's somebody that pops out of the crowd that's going to do something, or potentially do something bad, that you got, it's all green, blue, and white in the backgrounds and colors, and this one guy in the crowd pops out in the corner of the panel, and he is bright red.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, holy shit, what's up with this guy? So, just beautiful work all around. The letters, the reason that I wanted to get into the letters, when they're using different languages, whether it's, you know, Arabic, you have the little thing above the word blue, and in French, it actually says français, and they're also different colors in there, so you can see that they're talking in different languages, and you don't have to guess what languages they're using.
Nice.
It's just a beautiful, beautiful way of conveying that this is, you know, a multilingual book.
Right.
And I can't get over how good this whole thing is. There's espionage in here. There's hacker stuff in here. The fact that they're building up these villains who, it's interesting because the villains don't necessarily think they're villains.
Right. They think they're doing something for the greater good.
Right.
Right.
And I think the fact too that these villains are young people, you know, that are, they're probably in their early, oh, I think we're going to get a little loud here for a second. This is the dangerous side of recording in the bar.
Right.
But the fact that these hackers are young people in their early to mid-20s, I think is going to help make this book a lot more accessible.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, and this is an issue that's ongoing right now, you know. It's not something that happened 10 years ago that they're retelling. This is current.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. So anyway, Hacktivist, just amazing book all the way around. It's hard to get into it too much without giving everything away. I think that's probably the biggest struggle in me talking about this. But Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing have done a phenomenal job at creating these characters and just overall working on building them up, making them real, making your dialogue real. And they create tension in here where I found myself reading this book literally physically tensed up.
Oh, that's great, though.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
The fact that you can get all these different things happening in here, that I'm dying to read issue 4. And actually, Hacktivist was the same way. I mean, I could not wait. And, you know, we were lucky enough to talk to Colin, Jackson, and Marcus. Interviewed them last year when this book came out. These guys, man, they know what they're doing. So go check it out. You know, Archaea is an imprint of Boom.
Right.
So it's a little bit easier to find now than it was previously.
Right.
But if your shop doesn't have it, ask them to get it.
Oh, yeah.
Well worth your time.
Most shops will order anything you want.
Yeah. All right, Lynn. So what do you got in the rap jungle here?
So much like you, I'm going to do a number 3, which I also talked about the number 1 for.
So there's a radio station that I listen to. Well, it's a morning show, syndicated nationally. So some of our listeners, depending on where you're at, will know, but it's Free Beer and Hot Wings.
Oh, yeah.
And when you say I'm going to do a number 3, that has a completely different connotation, because there's the number 1 is the poo, or the pee, number 2 is the poo, number 3 is for a guy who comes out of the other hole, or, you know, or out of the same hole, just a different way. So when you say you're going to do a number 3, I'm like, no.
Oh,
no, you can't do that. And that's gross.
Yeah, that is gross. Thanks for giving me that image.
Yeah, so why don't you talk about a number 3?
Wait. Right.
Why don't you talk about a third issue?
There we go. I'm going to do The Incredible Shrinking Man. So I reviewed the first issue of this, and the reason why I want to talk about this issue, I wanted to talk about the second issue, but I didn't want to go from 1 to 2.
Same here.
You know?
Yeah.
This book is so good. And it's, so The Incredible Shrinking Man, if you don't know, is a Robert Matheson book. He did I Am Legend. He wrote What Dreams May Come. So he's done all kinds of great sci-fi books. Lots of them have been made into movies, like this one was way back in the day. But it's being retold by Ted Adams, and then Mark Torres does the the art, and Tommy Varga does the colors.
Okay, so I have a question.
Sure.
So this book, okay, this was originally a novel.
Right.
Okay, made into a movie, now made into a comic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now it got really quiet in here, so yeah. I was just going to scream at the microphone. The first thing I want to talk about is the cover of this book, because it's like an old school, like, circus poster.
Yeah.
Yeah, even in the bottom it even says, now on its third billing, and the entrance fee is $3.99 a head,
yeah.
Which is the comic issue number and the cost, so... I don't want to talk about the story too much because the story is really accessible. I mean, a lot of people who read comics are also into sci-fi. They probably know the main points of this story, or you've seen the movie.
When did the movie come out, do you know?
It was I want to say like in the 60s.
Okay.
Maybe the 70s, but it was a while ago. So essentially there's this guy. He is shrinking, in case you couldn't get this from the title.
That would be terrible if he wasn't.
Right, right.
Like, it's like...
He's the incredible shrinking man who's not actually shrinking.
Oh, what if just his hands shrunk? He just got small hands.
Tiny little baby hands.
Oh,
that would be awful. That
would be creepy. Grab my little hand. Let's go.
He is shrinking, I believe it's a seventh of an inch... each day, if I can recall correctly from the first issue.
That sounds about right.
So he knows that he has a limited amount of time, and he's been going through, like, the stages of grief, you know.
1957, oh, power
okay.
of the internet.
There we go.
Yeah.
So it was even before that.
Yeah, and I'm seeing images, like, when he's being chased by the cat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and so I believe they use a lot of the imagery from that movie in the book, but... This movie came out in 1957. It's a little outdated. They didn't have CGI back then. They did what they could, but... So, essentially he's shrinking. He knows he has a limited amount of time. Throughout the story, he's going through the stages of grief. He, you know, is going... Denial, depression, and...
Anger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's... I really wanted to talk about the second book. There's this whole scene, and I'm going to talk about it right now because it was amazing. His car breaks down on the side of the road, and this guy picks him up, and he thinks he's a kid. And he's a creeper.
Ah.
So he's totally trying to make the moves on this guy.
Does he take him to Subway?
I don't think they had those back then.
Oh, okay.
But it was just really interesting. Like, he never told the guy that he was actually an adult or anything like that. He just kind of let the guy do his thing. He didn't get that far. He didn't actually do his thing. But it was just really interesting to see how he's playing this off, as most people think that he's a kid now, because he's pretty small. And
so what is he, like 3 feet at this point, maybe?
It jumps back and forth. At one point... where it's like the present, he's 3/7 of an inch.
Oh.
And then, like, here he's 23 inches, and then it goes further and he's at 18 inches. The nice thing about that is it actually tells you, you kind of know where he's at in his story, because it tells you at the top of the page his size.
Right.
So you don't have to guess how,
so
how far long
the little captions in there fill you in.
If you wanted to sit down and do the math, you can figure out exactly how long it's been between each one. The writing in this I really like, because, I mean, it's adapted, but when you read it, it's cheesy, but not in a way that's bad, in a way that makes you feel like you're watching, like, a old movie.
Right.
So the dialogue, like, I hear it in, like, those exaggerated, like, 1950s accents.
What are you gonna do, see?
Yeah exactly.
Well, hey, we're gonna take the missus out for a drink.
Exactly. And I think that's a credit to the writing, because... if you were to just read this and not even know that it was based on something that was written and filmed so long ago, I think you could still get that from the writing.
Okay.
Just in the dialogue that they use.
Now, you may or may not know this, but I'm kind of curious. Because this is adapted from a novel, do you know if they're taking dialogue directly from it?
I do not know.
Okay.
I do not know that. I would imagine that there's probably key pieces.
Because there's no way you can shrink... You know, good example, I'm reading all the Dark Tower stuff.
Right.
Which, I've read all of those novels, and I'm sure there's a couple, like, there have been a couple lines here and there.
Right.
But overall, that it is truly adaptive.
Right.
And so it's close, but it's not the same. But I didn't know if...
I would imagine that this is kind of... I didn't ever read the novel. Sci-fi, not my genre when it comes to reading so much. But I love it in movies and comic books. I don't know what the difference is. But so, you know, at the beginning he's talking to the doctor and they kind of figure out what happened to him. And it has to do with this pesticide that he gets sprayed with on a boat originally at the beginning. And it affected his...
You're good.
It affected his... It created a toxin in him that's causing his bones to become really soft and shrink. So he has, like, super advanced osteoporosis, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the way they explain it, they use all these scientific terms that you're not sure if they're real or if they're just made up. So it gives you that, like, you know, sci-fi old feel because they're just pulling words out of their butt that sound fancy. But in the middle of it, and why the cover comes into it, is they end up going, him and his family, he's still with his wife, he's still with his daughter, he's substantially smaller than them, and this is what's great about the art, is you can see the perspective without it being super cartoonish.
Right.
Like, they actually, so his wife looks massive. I mean, her hand is probably 5 times bigger than his head.
Yeah.
So the perspective that it's drawn in is not... It's really good. You know, it doesn't make you feel like they just took a full-size man and shrunk him. Like, they took the proportions down equally and everything. So, but he meets Mrs. Tom Thumb, who is like a sideshow freak, who's the same size as him. And they have like an instant connection. I guess if you meet the only other 18-inch person on the planet, there's probably an instant connection there. I don't know. But... this leads into his final phase of creating, which is the acceptance. Because he meets her, they have sex, his wife is okay with it.
Well,
I would be too, I think.
Yeah, that's...
If your significant other was shrinking exponentially and you wanted them to be happy, what would you do, you know?
Yep, and that now she's got the hall pass.
Right.
You know?
There you go.
She's like, you remember Dave? You mean my brother? What?
Yeah, he's full size.
And he's full size.
But so she allows him to spend the night with this woman, and he realizes that even though he knows he's got like a very finite time left, that he wants to kind of live it to its fullest. He wants to not fight what's happening to him, but stop fighting the fact that it's happening.
Right.
The best part is at the end, his wife buys him a dollhouse to live in because nothing else is his size anymore.
Right.
And his daughter sees it and she gets really excited because she thinks she has a dollhouse to play with. And mom's like, that's not for you, honey, that's for dad. And she's like, that's okay, dad can be my dolly. And she picks him up and she's like hugging him and he's like, I can't breathe. So you're like, that's kind of funny, but oh my god, that's awful.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, at the same time. So, like I said, the story, the art come together nicely. The colors in here are great because I thought for a really long time that they were using muted tones as like the flashback.
Yeah.
But really, it's more so in terms of, I think his moods. So when he's kind of feeling a little happier about things, the colors are a little bit brighter. When he's in dire circumstances, they're really muted and
that's
and
a really dull. Nice touch.
Yeah. And it was nice that it was something I didn't notice right away.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know if they've been doing this since the beginning. I'm going to have to go back and look, but color is important.
Yep.
It adds to the feeling of a book so much.
The choice on color, and in fact, I was talking to an artist here recently who will remain unnamed, but they put out a book, and it was a, you know, basically a self-published type thing, but they put it all together, and when they did it, they got the first one back, and it came, like, it's like, you saw everything on the screen, but when it came back done, it was not the same. And so he actually had someone recolor the book.
Okay.
And so there's two versions of his book available. One that was the original, and then the second one, but because he was not happy.
Right.
You know, he was the writer and artist, but he didn't do the colors.
Right. Right.
So,
I mean, a lot of times we talk about the writers and the artists. Sometimes we forget to talk about the colorists. And
well, some, you know, it's tough. Like, when you break down a book, if it's done well, like Pactivist is a great example. It's done so well, unless you take a step back, all you're going to see in your mind is the story and how I felt, like all tense
right
there at the end. But it's because of all the other pieces.
Right.
So
It's true. But yeah, I would suggest everybody pick this up. You can't start at 3. You have to start at the beginning. Do it. It's good.
All right. Cool. We're back to Dance Party USA. Do a little news.
Yes. Let's start with
some ecstasy and you know, start rolling in the club.
Right.
Because that's what I feel like I'm doing right now. And I'm praying to God that this will come out okay when we put it together.
We'll find out.
Yeah. All right, so
let's talk about Boom first. That's what I want to talk about first.
What do you want to talk about?
Boom Studios.
Okay. All right, so Boom Studios, there's an article that came out on Bleeding Cool here just within the last day or two, and it talks about how Boom Studios is going to be shrinking their titles, their number of titles, by 15%. And, you know, it kind of comes into this whole thinking of, let me back up. The bigger thing for them is that they're one of the things they're focusing on, by not putting as many titles on out, they want to get more, like, they want to get more comic book stores to carry all of their titles. And so they're offering an incentive program, or a Boom Innovator program, which basically, if retailers are willing to buy a certain amount of all their books, every issue of a miniseries 1 through 4, and they commit to it, that there will be 4 times a year where they can ship that stuff back to Boom if it doesn't sell, in exchange for newer merchandise.
Right.
I think that's brilliant.
It's super smart, because I don't know about your comic book store, but my comic book store, a lot of times, especially with the smaller publishers, they will only order if it's on somebody's pull list.
Right.
They won't order any extra because they don't know if it's going to go or not.
Yeah. The one big thing with this is that with Boom decreasing the number of titles, one of the things that a lot of people have started talking about is there are a lot of retailers out there that are thinking about the problems with everything being that, you know, we've got comic book companies that are more or less poaching their own market. That they're going out there, that they're putting too many books out, and so people are coming in and they're only going to purchase maybe 4 titles a week or $50 a month or whatever it may be. And they want to make sure that whatever it is, that, like, you know, if they're going out there and it's like, okay, well, here's a new title. I was only partially on board with this one, so I'm going to drop that one and pick this one up instead.
Right.
So are they cutting their own throats? I think Boom is perhaps addressing this and saying, let's make sure we put out the absolute best, because realistically, I buy a lot of damn books.
I do too.
But I can tell you, I don't know how many times, I can't count them, but probably in the last year, at least once a month, I've gone there with a stack of books and gone, oh my God, there's no way I'm going to read all these. I have time to read them. What am I putting back so that I can pick up this one or this one instead?
Right.
We're literally, I'm like, well, there's a new series coming out, and I have dropped books
to check out a new one.
Just to check something else out. So, you know, oh, there goes a pool cue.
But no, it's, I mean, I love Image, and I love their model of throwing as much stuff out there, because you get all kinds of new stuff. But I'm only going to buy one or two image books a week.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's upwards of 10.
Yeah.
From Image coming out. And there's no way. They're stealing from their own customers, you know. You're not bringing new people in. Anyway, yeah.
So it's, you know, it's cool to see that you know, Image is doing that. And, you know, one of the things, too, like we talked about Image a while back, was their whole comics forward movement. They're still pushing that.
Right.
You know, which is great that they didn't just go for something like, I'm only going to do this right now and drop it because, you know, fads come and fads go. But they're still doing the hashtag comics forward. I mean, it's on the back of all their books.
Yeah.
You know. I love that. And I like the fact, one of the reasons I've respected Boom as much as I have for so long is because they really stick to what it is that they say they're going to do. They're like, this is our vision. This is what we want to do. This is who we are. And, you know, we truly believe that we're bringing the best stuff to you. If you don't agree with us, that's okay. We're going to do our own thing.
Right.
So I've got a lot of respect for that.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And by The Walking Dead, we're talking the TV show.
Yes.
So this is a bit of a spoiler, but, you know, it's all over. So anybody that knows, if you don't want to know about The Walking Dead, get off the internet.
Right.
And
right.
Where are you finding us?
On the internet.
Oops. So apparently they are bringing the character of Jesus, a.k.a. Paul Monroe, into the show, which... Jesus is an awesome character, and I won't spoil who he is other than the fact that Jesus is tied in with a character called Negan.
Right.
Which...
everyone's losing their shit over.
If Negan comes in, oh my God, hearts are going to be broken for people that haven't read the comics.
Yeah.
But, well, we assume.
Right, because you don't know.
Because...
they've changed things.
Yeah, so here's something. I'm totally spoiling TV and comic both, so skip ahead 30 seconds. In the show, they killed off Andrea way early, and she sucked. In the book, she's still alive.
Right.
And she's awesome, and she's actually my favorite character.
Right.
So, not everything is the same.
Yeah.
And then you also have situations like people like Daryl.
Right. He wasn't even in the comic.
He's never been in the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And everybody loves Daryl.
Yep. So, we'll see, though. I wonder if Jesus can come in and win over the hearts and minds of people and displace I don't mean it like that, like, you know, like he's gonna come in and convert. They call him Jesus because he looks like Jesus.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, is he gonna turn water into wine? What's going on here?
Or if he could just turn dirty water into clean.
There you go.
I think they'd be fine with that. You know, because it's not necessarily the best case scenario on what they got going there. So
Right. All right,
what else did you have other ones?
Let's see here. So, you know how we all love variant covers, right? our favorite things ever.
I do like some variant stuff.
Some of it's good. I've been enjoying the Bombshell variant covers that they've been doing.
The Bombshells?
Yeah, DC. DC has some variant covers. I believe they're coming out in January. They're Color Your Own covers, which I'm kind of excited about.
You know, I look at it this way. I like the fact that you have a... like covers that are black and white that are basically here's your original art. I think it's cool. I hope people do actually color these.
I do too.
Like I would love to see like colorists like Ryan Stegman's wife Erin has been coloring some stuff for him. I know at cons. I'd be willing to go pay her to hand color.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
for sure.
I also hope that a lot of people hand color these so that they're worthless. You know,
nice,
that they
nice.
Don't know what they're doing, that they just give them to their kids with crayons.
I kind of want to color one, so maybe I'll buy two and leave one uncolored and color one myself.
It's the 90s all over.
Right?
I'm going to buy one to save and one to sell, because everybody's going to want one of these later.
Except mine's one to save and one to color.
Yeah, which just I'm fine with, because it just diminishes the actual good stock.
Right.
My question when I saw this, is this DC's way of saying it's they want to do it as a marketing gimmick where it's color your own cover, or are they just not wanting to pay a colorist?
No. Well, the article says that they're trying to play off, because apparently there's this huge craze right now in adult coloring books. I don't know if
there's weird adult crazes all over that I would stay away from.
That's true. That is true. But from what I can gather in the article, that's kind of the craze that they're going after, is this adult coloring book trend.
Are these the same people that would buy comics, though? And that's the marketing genius in me wondering.
That's a good question, because if they can pull in more people, then great. That's what you should do.
Right. But I mean, are adult colorists
the same people that read comic books?
Or are they going to find out about this? Or are they just going to go buy coloring books?
Right.
You know, I mean, because now you got to look at distribution. Do you put these comics out in coloring book areas?
In, like, craft stores?
Right.
Right.
Like Joanne's Fabrics?
Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know. Well, like, what are you going to do?
But that's a good question.
Speaking of colors, we saw the cover for, or an image at least, from Image Comics Ringside. And the colors on that are actually what you and I both went, holy shit, that's really awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, it's basically, it's a pinky purple and green. You know, it's just a real simple color scheme on it. But Image is bringing a book that's more of the, like, real life behind the, you know, letting people behind the curtain of wrestling.
Right.
And they're going to see what goes on there. So that's going to come out end of October. And
something worth mentioning, it seems like there's a huge crossover between the people who like wrestling and people who like comic books.
You know, we've talked about that before. What's your thought process on why? I have my own, but
I think that people who like comic books and people who like wrestling, both of them kind of give you something to aspire to, maybe. Like, wrestling is over the top, but you can watch it and you can root for people, and there's good guys and bad guys, a lot like in comic books.
Well, and I think that's one of the biggest things, is that you have your heroes, you have your villains, you have your ongoing serialized stories.
Right.
And I think that's why you will have that same draw.
Crossover.
Plus, it's larger than life.
It is.
So I think that's kind of the main reason why people, you know, why you have such a large crossover of comic book fans who like wrestling, but also wrestling fans who like comics.
Right.
You know, and that's a, you know, which is why you'll see a lot of wrestlers at these shows.
There's that, and I think that the WWE, at least, has kind of figured that out, because they've gotten, like, Stephen Amell from Arrow to come in and do stuff like that. So it's nice to see that they're actually recognizing that these two groups of people are actually one giant group of people.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. So, Independence Day, Tony's favorite holiday. There's a sequel coming out, which I know we mentioned before.
We did.
And there's now a prequel to the sequel that is, it's going to be a comic book prequel or pre-sequel?
Pre-sequel.
Pre-sequel.
Like.
I think we'll go with that.
The other one sounds hard to say.
Pre-sequel. there's a comic book pre-sequel coming out, and that's going to be, so if you're big into that, there you go. But I guess the pre-sequel comic, the release date hasn't been announced, the creators haven't been announced, but they're just saying it's coming.
Yeah, there's been a lot of time between the last movies and the new movie, so it'll probably be like one of those Star Wars things where they have to pull in what's happened over the past 10, 20 years.
Yep. One other big thing that came out this week is Black Panther #1 has a new writer on that. We wanted to give a shout out, and it's Ta-Nehisi Coates is going to be doing that, and it's kind of it's kind of a big thing, because he's never really done comics before.
No, he's done legitimate
journalism.
Yeah,
which, you know, a lot of people, I'm hearing good and bad on this, because a lot of people are going, well, you know, is he going to know how to do this? Blah blah blah. You know what? If you're a good writer, if you are a good writer, you can adapt your style to different formats.
Oh yeah,
and the thing is, he's a big fanboy himself. So that makes a difference. I mean, you look at, like, Brian Posehn as a perfect example.
For sure.
You know, he was a lifelong fanboy. Uh-oh. No, here comes the little head bob. Pretty soon, like, you're going to start doing some rolls. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, whoop. And so, I'm so white.
That is true.
But no, I've heard some people complaining because they're like, well, he doesn't have any experience in this whatsoever.
I'm pretty sure everybody that starts writing comic books starts without experience.
I'm going to give one example of somebody who hasn't done anything in the industry prior, and as far as I know, hadn't really done a whole lot on the creative writing side. You ever hear of Charles Soule?
No, yeah.
What's he do? He's an attorney? Yeah. He's an attorney that does business law.
Right.
Monday through Friday. And writes a shit ton of amazing comics that are...
A ton.
Yeah.
Not even exaggerating.
So, if you are a detractor, shut up until you read it.
There you go.
All right. What else did you have there, Lens?
I don't think I had anything else. Oh, just kidding. I totally do. I don't know how I almost forgot about this because...
I don't know how you did either.
Oh, my God. So, Battle World, right? All these great little offshoot comic books coming out. My favorite one by far, X-Men 92.
Yep.
By far. I have read, I think there's three of them out now, and every single time I read it, I'm like, I really wish this was going to keep going because this is awesome. And it is. They're keeping it going. It's going to become an ongoing, and I'm so excited about it. Bringing Gen X with it.
Well, and what's kind of fun is that this series apparently... It's not only going to be influenced by the 1992 animated show, but according to the article that we saw and what writers Chris Sims and Chad Bowers said to Newsarama, they're going to pull from that era's comic books, toys, video games, coloring books. So
there you go.
That's why DC's doing it. They got to get on the coloring book fan list first. And even fast food giveaways.
Like Happy Meal toys.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, that could be awesome. So
yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. All right, one last bit of news, and this is a personal one here, just as kind of a heads up, because we don't like to leave people hanging, but in about the next month, I am going to be phasing myself out of the podcast.
He is.
That's
true.
Yeah. So it's been an awesome 3 years and 2 months and 3 weeks, I think.
Oh my God, you have it
something
down
like
to a week.
Something like that. You know.
He hasn't been counting at all.
No. But yeah. So life changes for me, and it's time for me to just say, you know what, I need to take care of my own.
Right.
Personal things and kind of move on. But there's a really good chance that you guys might see me pop in from time to time.
Oh, of course.
And who knows? Maybe you'll see me in different aspects down the road,
yeah.
too. And if you... people know how to get a hold of me.
It's true.
But if you want to find me, go to a con.
That is... Yes.
Yeah.
That is
so,
100%
anyway,
true.
Anyway, more news on that later. I'm sure we'll probably have a couple different kind of blown-out sessions. Not blowouts, but blown-out. Because
yeah.
I plan on being... completely inebriated for at least one of them.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, so, anyway, on to the next. What do we got? Indy Turnpike.
Yes, let's talk about this.
Okay, Indy Turnpike this week. I have, we've gone from Indy Club to Sports Time. Yeah. This is why I love this bar. You never know what's
going
to happen here.
It's football.
Yeah, no, it's baseball.
Oh, I'm looking at soccer.
Oh.
I called it
the football.
The football.
Yeah. Okay, so I have Drawn Onward by Matt Madden, and this is published by Retrofit Comics and Big Planet Comics. And this is, it's not a numbered issue because it's one single story, and I have to give a little bit of credit here too because this story, while it was just, I just picked it up, this is not the first time that it's been released.
Okay.
It's actually... Originally, it was put out in issue 182 of a magazine called One Story. And that came out in August of 2013.
Okay.
So, this book, I'm gonna talk a little bit more about what this book is than a lot of other things. Because Matt Madden has done some interesting things where in this comic book... He basically does a lot of experimental comics. And basically what he kind of tries to do, from my understanding, is to push the boundaries and see what comics can and can't not do. He tries to more or less see what rules have to apply to comics and what ones don't, and which ones and what things, when you break them, makes them not work.
Right.
So,
which is great.
This is truly, like, when we talk like indie creator owned stuff like that, I mean, you want something that's not the normal, this is not the normal. And what he's got here is, and I'll kind of, I'm going to tell a little bit of the story here, because it's important when we look at this, and you'll understand why later. It follows this girl who is sitting down at her drawing board, drawing a comic, which the first line of it says, "This comic is a double suicide note," which you're like, "What the fuck is this?"
Right.
Way
to start dark.
Yeah, and basically, you kind of have these. While she's what she's drawing are flashbacks of her in a subway, this guy approaching her who keeps following her. She doesn't know who he is, and he's like, you know, he's like yelling at her, "Why are you doing this?" You know, all these types of things. And he keeps trying to track her down, and she just keeps blowing him off. But she finds herself getting more and more infatuated with this guy and wants to know who he is. And eventually, even though they know nothing about each other, they share a moment and they share a kiss. And then after they share the kiss, she's like, "You're gorgeous. I'm crazy about you. You know, I love you." And now he starts avoiding her in the same way, a little bit at a time. And then finally, just, you know, at the end, with him, you know, getting completely away from her and, you know, saying, "I don't know you." And then, you know, when the book kind of comes to an end, and I'm sorry for spoiling this, but it's important that people understand, because otherwise what I say isn't going to make sense. The last line of this book is, "The beginning of my story was the end of his, and the beginning of his story was the end of me." Inside this front cover, then, or inside the back cover, is a mirror image of the front, which made, and by mirror, I mean true mirror. It, like, all the letters are backwards, right. Everything's backwards.
Well, even the pictures are, the colors are transposed.
Yep, and then the colors are reversed as well. Yep. What was black is white, and what was white was black. I then flipped back, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. And so, through all the flashback scenes, I read the pages backwards. So, you still read the pages top to bottom, left to right on the pages, but, you, like, the page on the right, you read first, the page on the left.
Right.
So, not quite like reading manga, but
a little bit,
kind of,
right.
And when you read, when you go back and read through, you find that this guy wasn't a weird stalker that had someone infatuated by him, that, or that he wasn't a stalker, that she was,
right.
And it's weird, because when you get to the middle of that point where they share that kiss, that's the one moment where things were good for both of them.
And that's why it's a double page spread.
Yep. And also why, you know. And so, it's nuts. And the other thing is, too, is, like, you can also, I think, read this book from the middle going out.
Oh.
And basically, now, what he did was he tried to create a palindrome-type comic.
Right.
Where front to back and back to front, it's the same, but it's more of a mirror, because it's the opposite.
Right.
It's not, like, it reads front to back and back to front, so it is a true palindrome in that, but it's mirrored in the fact that who you sided with on one way is the opposite,
right,
going the other. Just brilliant on this, and for something very experimental, it's beautiful. As for the artwork, everything is black and white, just pen and ink, and like the little parts where you see her drawing, it's very clean.
Right.
Very, very clean pencils, very, very clean inks. The rest is more of a marker style drawing, where it's, I liked this thought on the art, because your memories, you don't remember everything exactly. And so with it being a little bit more scratchy and a little bit more of a harsher feel and look and tone to it, I think it's more true to a memory, because you don't remember all the fine details. Some of them you do.
Ooh, good point.
But, you know, and I think, but a lot of the stuff, you know, we have our own filters on how we view things. And so when you look at this, I think it's kind of that same thing.
Right.
really, really amazing, mind-blowing piece.
Oh, it is. You let me read it before we started.
I was going to make you read it.
Yeah.
Like, because there was, I'm like, no, you need to read this.
It was really good. It's definitely, I mean, I've read books. I think, what was it, the one Jeff Lemire did.
Which one? He's done a...
Trillium.
Oh, yeah.
Where you read it, he had different ways
to
read things.
Yeah, you flip the book upside down.
I really think that when you get that involved in a book and it keeps you like that, where you're like, oh, I'm willing to put this much effort into reading it, just a tribute to this, how good the story is.
Well, and I think this is the kind of stuff, like, this and Hacktivist are two perfect examples of why I absolutely love comic books, because I love seeing what you can do with a comic.
Right.
You know, I want to know, like, when you break down the actual parts and pieces of it, what can you do? You know, and that to me is huge.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, cheers to Matt Madden on this. And thank you to my comic shop for putting it on the shelf. Because, it's bagged and boarded, and I'm like, okay. Which speaks very well to the art on the cover. And the fact that it's a little bit, it's a different size book as well.
It is, yep.
The width is more of the of a golden age, but it's shorter than a book would be now.
It reminds me a lot of, like, the true self-published stuff from back in the day that were just, like, magazines almost.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it reminds me of.
Well, and I think people, too, that... that are fans of Cena Grace and his artwork, his style, I think would really like this style of art as well. So, you know, if you aren't sure as far as what you want to pick up, some people pick things up based on story, some people are going to pick them based on art, you know, it's their key thing, you know, but maybe that's a reason that you should pick it up too.
Sure.
So, all right, that's Indie Turnpike for me.
That was a good one.
So, all right, we've got some boozes to talk about. Yeah. So, this week, we've got... Where's that? Fight Club 2, number 5. Oh, crap.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I thought... I thought I lost my look. And Fight Club 2, number 5, by Chuck Palahniuk and Cam Stewart. And we are going to pair this with The Drink with No Name. Because what's the first rule of Fight Club?
Don't talk about Fight Club.
What's the second rule of Fight Club?
Don't talk about Fight Club.
Okay, now the first rule of this drink is don't give it a name.
Nice.
So, this drink is 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1/4 ounce of Contro, and 1/8 ounce of green chartreuse. And chartreuse can be quite overpowering for people, mm-hmm. which is why this drink is kind of nice, because it actually, the vodka mellows it out. So for people that are not familiar with it, you can work your way into this. Kind of like Fight Club, your first night at the Drink with No Name, you have to drink.
Yeah.
And so...
And you kind of got to work your way into it.
Yep, but just be prepared, because just like Fight Club, this drink is going to punch you right in the face multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
But at the end, you're gonna like it and you're gonna want more. So there you go. Drink with No Name, Fight Club 2, number 5.
I love it.
Alright.
I love it.
You have anything else for last call there, Wins?
Oh, I grabbed a coffee.
Or any other notes that you wanted to mention?
I have no notes.
Yeah, did you see that it really wasn't news as much, but it is noteworthy? So I guess I'll tag this on here at the tail end. The Jessica Jones trailer.
I did not watch it.
Okay. It's just a nice little teaser.
Yeah.
Is all. There's I can't say anything about it because it truly is just a teaser.
Right.
But I think for people that aren't familiar with her, there's a good hook there to make you go, who the hell is Jessica Jones?
That's great.
And I think that's what they need to do with the character. Like,
oh, for sure. Because she is, I mean, they were worried about Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man pulling in people because they're lesser known. And then you're getting down to Jessica Jones level. There's a lot of people who have no idea who she is.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. So, okay. Only other thing I had for last call this week was The Spire, number 3, from Simon Spurrier, Jeff Stokely, and Andre May. That was everything that I had on my list that I wanted to bring to attention. There are a couple other things, but nothing I was blown away with.
I had a couple. I picked up Nameless, number 5, Grant Morrison, and Chris Burnham. This book is a mind fuck. It's good. I want to keep reading it because I have no idea what's going on. But it, yeah, it's not for the weak stomached reader for sure. Like, really? Kevin wouldn't like this.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's a little gory and gruesome.
Yeah, yeah. I picked up Years of Future Past, number 5, which is the last one of this run.
I want to come right back to this if there's anything, unless it mentions something
else.
Oh,
and the Book of Death, 3 out of 4 from Valiant.
Okay.
Really pulling me into Valiant.
Now, okay, so Years of Futures Past has a cover reminiscent of X-Men 141.
Right.
Am I the only one that's getting tired of seeing covers that are
reminiscent of that cover?
Yeah, in homage to it, if you will.
Yeah, it's a little played out. I mean, this one obviously works a little bit more because
it's the actual fucking book?
Right, right. Yeah, it's the retelling, the alternate version of the story. But yes, this is probably one of the most overused covers from Marvel.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, I guess we're back to the dance club. So I think that
that means down.
Yeah. Time to put on my dancing pants.
Derek's gonna do like the sprinkler, the lawnmower, something super white like that.
Actually, I have the best running man ever.
Oh my gosh, we have to see this.
Yeah. You've never seen me do the running
man? No.
I do the running man when I do karaoke sometimes too.
Well, you know, usually when I'm with you and you're doing karaoke, I'm super drunk. So
that's true. Yeah. Yeah. All right, guys, keep reading your comic books. We will be back next week to talk to you more about them then. We'll see you.
Bye.
Fancy time.